Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we're committed to helping people and Nordics tech organisations realise their potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Georgia from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm your host. Today I'm joined by Anders Theresen, who's Lead Product Manager at Schibsted. I have Rebecca Hagnestad, who's Lead Product Development Engagement and Team Manager at Bonnier News. And I have Andreas Bernardsson, who's a CPO and Product Manager at Datema Easy Logic, to discuss bridging development and leadership. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. I'd love to know who you are, what you do, and what your biggest passion is. Anders, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Anders. As Georgia mentioned, I'm a lead product manager at Schibsted. I work in what we call user relationship and choices, which is a roundabout way of saying I work with the privacy products we have to gather consents and give the users control of their data, and also with a part of the account solution that is user-facing. I actually started my career as a journalist. I was a journalist for sort of 11, 12 years before taking the leap over into product. So I have worked with media in various shapes or forms for all my career. Half of those 20 years plus as a journalist, and half in the product side, working with various parts of the media setup, be it apps or, so in this case, privacy and data management. Yeah, and I think my passion when it comes to sort of engaging with sort of at work is really bringing people together and seeing how you can, by connecting the right people and giving them responsibilities, sort of paired with coaching them, can make people grow and then take new steps and really blossom. I think that when that happens, it makes me very happy.
Amazing. Thank you so much for telling us that. And Rebecca, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Like Andesh, I also started out as a journalist, but I didn't work for 12 years. I only worked for 2 years. I was a reporter at Expressen, a tabloid here in Sweden. And then I joined the tech side like 6 years ago, and then I worked in tech. And now I'm working at our commercial side in our engagement domain. So I work with how to engage readers and how can we get them to stay in the subscription so that they don't churn? And I lead a team of two analysts. And then I also work with our product development. Now we have a big joint subscription called Result, where I work with the products connected to that. And biggest passion, it's kind of tricky. I think like Anders, it's like when you connect people together and you see the light in their eyes when they're, oh, we can do this together. And that's always the best, like when you have hack days or stuff like that, and you can have a common goal and work towards that. But also when you can connect the journalism with the product development, and you can see the joint efforts on how to enlighten people and bring out the great journalistic articles and stuff like that.
Nice. So when it all comes together, love that. Perfect. Yeah. And last but not least, Andreas, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Andreas. I'm the Chief Product Officer at Datema Easy Logic. I'm thrilled to be a part of this discussion. I think my background in IT leadership spanning somewhere around 10 years now, I'll bring a unique perspective to the table with my expertise in leadership technology. Strategy, both product and some business, as well as a lot of agile methodology as well. I think this has helped me navigate the intersection between technology development and effective leaderships. That's usually the role I've taken in my career. The company I work for now is Logic, is a cloud-based low-code platform known for its rapid custom delivery compared to traditional delivery methods. The platform itself really empowers business to swiftly create tailored applications and meet customer-specific needs. It really delivers value quickly to organizations thanks to its low-code implementation. And my passion as a leader, I would say, is continuous learning. I really enjoy learning new things and having both myself and my team being continue to learn in the process and in our daily deliveries is I find that really my passion around that is high.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Well, thank you all for introducing yourselves. Now that we've established a bit of a context behind you, let's move on to the topic in focus. So you've all brought a question or a statement on bridging development and leadership. As usual, I'll work around the room. I'll pose your question, but if you could give me the reasons behind it, and then each of you will basically have an opportunity to give your take on the situation. So let's start with yours, Anders. How do you manage in times of uncertainty during a company reorganization? Could you tell me a little bit of context and background where that comes from?
Sure. I mean, we're always dealing with uncertainty in one way or the other. That's what sort of all bets when doing development are dealing with uncertainty. You could, of course, limit them in various ways or mitigate the risk. But I'm talking more on sort of when working in a company that's fundamentally changing the way it operates. It's a tricky situation because as a leader, you need to be there for the people that report to you and for the rest of the organization. But you yourself might not know more than they do. So that's a tricky situation that I've sometimes found myself in. And I'm always reflecting on that, sort of what my own role in that is, and then what is expected of me and how I can be of most value and use to both the organization and to the people that report to me. So that's sort of the background of this question.
Nice. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, if I can start, I think that, as you said, Anders, it's always a tricky situation. But in our modern landscape, sort of, we can't really get away from that. It's ever changing, right? It's always restructuring and ever changing. So I think that a very open mindset, not only that you are transparent towards the ones who report to you and the ones you report to, makes it a lot easier, but also that you're sort of humble to the challenges that this affects some people a lot, some people less, and both the differences. I think that if you're humble to the differences, then and how it affects different people, I think that helps a lot. But transparency, I would say, foremost is the most important thing. If you have some information, then you can share it. You should share it, basically.
Yeah, I agree. Transparency is vital, and also that you isolate what you know so you can paint a picture for your team that this is what we know, this is what we don't know, and then you can move forward from that. And once you like really understand what the change is going to be, you can add that to the picture. But you can have something like a start plate and work from that.
I think one aspect is, of course, people react differently to uncertainty. I've been around the block a couple of times, so I think I'm quite okay. I've learned over the years that hardworking people, there's always a way forward and a place for them, and you shouldn't worry too much. And I mean, my teams are all of them are great people, so I'm not that worried. But it's always a tricky situation because you don't want to downplay other people's worry and feelings, even if you yourself feel that, oh, it's going to pan out, everything's going to be fine. You just need to sit down in the boat and focus on the horizon. I'm trying to be sort of my take on it is try to listen more than I talk. Because as we all know, in uncertain times, speculating or pushing too hard on sort of 90% probabilities is bound to come back and bite you at some point, because 90% is not 100. And then, yeah, you shouldn't talk too much, better to listen.
I think you're right, Anders. I also think that you make a good point on it's good to be, as I said, transparent and knowing all the information, but you don't always have all the information. And speculating will most likely just need to lead to unnecessary worry, which is why, as you said, just sitting down and listen can be a big help. And then just like keep reminding everybody that this is what we know. This is what we know now. And I mean, speculating in something won't make anything better. And as you said, it usually pans out, right?
Yeah, and when you listen, you also have a responsibility to reflect that to the lead, the ones you report to, so that they understand that this is people are worried about this, not so much about that, but this is a big issue for people. So you need to like address that. You can help each other in the organization to find like what's the trickiest part.
Right, that's a great point as well, Rebecca. Finding the pain points and the worries of the people who report to you, and then like condensing them and reporting them up to management is great, because then you can have a sort of a how do we tackle this? How do we inform all of them if they know like the worst worries of people under? Then usually the transition or the reorganization or whatever it is that causes the uncertainty can be easier managed.
Oh, exactly.
Thank you.
Perfect. Hopefully that can help Anders with anything for yourself. But yeah, no, some really good ideas there, and it comes across like a little bit of internal user research, but with your team, right, instead.
Right. Yeah.
Right up your street, Rebecca. perfect. And yeah, we'll move on to Rebecca's question too. So here I have, can you share a time when you encountered an us versus them situation due to different metrics and priorities? And how did you address it? What approach has been most effective for you in managing this challenge? Would you be able to give me a bit of background behind that?
Yes. As I mentioned before, I used to be a journalist. And as a journalist, you focus on the reader. You want to make the query, make good journalism for your readers so that they can get information or stuff like that. And then I joined the tech side. And then you have the users. And you want to do the best thing for the users, because you need to focus on performance and you need to make the user and for the user, you need to focus on the best customer journey, and you don't want like images all over the place, even though the journalist wants that, because that's a good experience for the reader. And then I joined the commercial side, and then you have the customer, and you need to sell subscriptions to that person. And maybe you want a pop-up to tell them about, you can buy this subscription or maybe this subscription. And all these kind of different perspectives on the same person sitting in front of your screen creates a bit of like internal conflict between these different parts of the organization. And you don't always like, as a journalist, you can say like, how can't they understand that this is the best thing for the reader? Or maybe as a developer, how can't they understand that this is the best thing for the user? And when you meet up and you talk, I think that's the only way to kind of address this thing. You have hack days or stuff like that, so that you meet up and you can discuss the problem and find out that it's the same person sitting there and taking part in the journalistic journey. So I would say that hack days or maybe just talk to one another is the best thing to do.
Nice.
I agree. I think you're also talking about the same page view from three different perspectives here. It's the same sort of event if you look at it for, but one is from a reader, a user, and a customer. It's the same event you're all talking about with different perspectives on it. And sometimes I think the actual sort of terminology we use when we talk about things, journalists have their words, developer have their words, and the ad sales have their words that they really, really push. And sometimes we talk about the same thing, but with slightly different words. And that's where we come in as product managers, especially, as you mentioned, you have a journalistic background, as have I, being a sort of an interpreter between the journalistic side, the editorial room, and the developers is something that I've used countless times in my career. And that's sort of one of the skills I bring to the table, being able to talk to different parties using their language in a way to build bridges. But I do agree that hack days, sort of anything you can do to shorten the distance between the different parts of an organization is what brings everyone together and also possibly gets people to step out of their own shoes and into their coworkers' shoes, if only for a day or a couple of hours. That understanding creates bridges for future discussions.
I really do think that Anders is hitting the nail on the head on this one, in that we all use, especially when it's sort of different people coming together and doing something within the techscape, then we usually use different domain languages, right? You guys talk about it's different for journalists, it's different for developers, or it's even different for business people. Whoever the stakeholder is, you come in with your sort of perspective and your priorities, which are usually the ones that you sort of go for, right? And the ones that you value highly. So I think that, as Anders said, if you have someone like us in the room, that can be sort of the translator that can help facilitate the conversation so that everybody eventually realizes that you are all talking about the same thing, just using different words, right? You all usually have sort of a common goal, which is that you want to do the best for the user of the platform so that they can get the best information or the best ad experience if you're a marketing guy, right? It all depends. It's the best product for the user, usually, which means that as long as everybody's talking to the same language, I would add to what you said, Anders, is that it's important to reiterate a common goal that you have. And that common goal usually is that, well, we should do the best product here, right? And we all have our different sort of angles on how to create that. And a lot of the times it is just using different languages, but as I said, communication and just understanding where we're all coming from gets us a long way there, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, all of these perspectives are incredibly valid.
Right.
I mean, the journalistic perspective of telling a story is what provides value, part of the value to the user and the reader. Performance, if a page doesn't load properly or it sort of doesn't work in a satisfactory way, that becomes a blocker for the user experience. And at the end of the day, it needs to be a valuable experience to the providers of the service as well, if it's Bonnier News or Schibsted, as we're competitors. that's at the end of the day, it needs to be valuable to all parties.
I would agree also that's what really makes the product, right? I mean, what makes a great product, I would say, is that you have all these experiences and you have all these competences that when it comes together and is valued, really gives you a great product experience, right? But it needs, so that you need the ad guy to tell you this, or you need the journalist to say, well, this is really important, and everybody, it is important for the final product that all of these are able to take a space.
And I would also add that you need to be humble, that you'd have to understand that your perspective is as important as the other perspective. It's not that right. You have to compete with each other. You have to like help each other. And I think also that one of the keys when you have this kind of situation, if it develops into a conflict, is to get people to know each other outside of work, so that you understand that, oh, this is a person I'm talking to. It's not just a colleague. It's a person, and we can connect on another level, not just through work. I think that also helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I found that those kind of conflicts are usually rooted in a deep passion, at least majority of the times. I also think that a lot, sometimes our sort of asynchronous way of communicating actually feeds or creates conflicts, because it's really hard to read nuance from a Slack thread. If you just sit down and talk to each other for 5 minutes, you see the other person, you hear the tone of their voice, and you can usually see that they're in it for the right reasons. This is not someone trying to sort of create a conflict, but they're really passionate about their perspective. So trying to, as I said, put yourself in their shoes and as usually meet their best argument, not their worst arguments, is a good thing to bridge those gaps. Because if you meet their worst arguments, they're just going to feel like you're purposely misinterpreting them.
Great
yes.
point.
It's like it's a big problem when it comes to this.
It is, as Anil said, it's hard to find nuance in text, right? It's either interpreted, most of the time it is interpreted in the worst way possible.
That's what, I mean, the frequent use of emojis is to help give people clues right. of what we mean, because we don't know each other well enough to leave it without that emoji indicating that it's a joke or whatever. So, I mean, there's these visual crutches in form of emojis, but sometimes, especially if it's sort of more serious, you don't want to use those emojis. Talk face-to-face instead.
Yeah, and the emojis can be different things to different people. So you have this smiley face in Slack, and it's for some people, it's passive-aggressive. So you can't always rely on them, too.
I am super guilty of using a smiley face on almost every message. So just know, if anyone's listening and I have messaged you with a smiley face, it comes from a good place.
I understand. We want to make sure that people don't interpret us in a way that we don't want to be interpreted. And it's a double-edged sword, because even that is, as you said, Rebecca, not always read in the same way.
Exactly. No, that's super interesting, guys. I think we'll move on to Andreas. I've got your question here. Yeah. So how do you navigate the different priorities and objectives between development and leadership teams to ensure alignment towards common goals? And what strategies have you found most effective in fostering collaboration and understanding across these groups? Tell me where that comes from, please.
Well, it basically, as we talked about, we sort of touched base on it a little bit during our conversation here now, but I think that especially in our role, right, or similar roles, it is the everlasting struggle to bridge the gap between leadership, and I specifically mean sort of business leadership in this sense, and especially development. I mean, there is sort of some sort of methodologies to like set a North Star and try everyone work towards the same goal. But usually whenever you come down to like the nitty gritty and everyday work, that sort of can get filtered out. And then what usually ends up happening is people don't understand each other. And I was just curious to see that. I mean, as I said before, I've usually taken the role as chief translating officer, right? Translating between technology teams and senior leadership, from everything to why is it so hard to come with an estimate? How hard can it be? That's like the development team answers with, well, how long is a string? Which is always like an appreciated answer for leadership. So I was just curious, you know, to hear your thoughts on that, like how both experiences, but also like, have you found the golden ticket?
I have not found the golden ticket.
Damn it. It's a fascinating subject. It's right at the core of what we deal with every day.
Yeah, and I don't think you can find a silver bullet for every situation. You need to address different topics and different people in different ways. So, but I mean, I think that you meet people with empathy and understand their situation and help people, like, why do they ask you for an estimate? And why do they ask you how long is a string? Like, you need to build kind of empathy for each other and help people understand their situations. I think you recognize that a lot of journalists, they are stressed and they answer very, like, as we said in Slack, they are very, like, quick and they answer very, like, maybe they don't sound very nice.
It's
always
very curious. It's three words max.
Yeah. Yeah, three words max, maybe five different messages in a row. But you need to help people understand that they answer not because they are angry, but they're just stressed. They need to, they're in a different kind of time zone than you are. And create understanding for each other, I would say, is a way I'll usually use.
That was actually my biggest challenge moving from the journalistic side to the product side, the time frame I operated in. Mm-hmm. From going from now to talking in sprints, talking in sort of quarters, talking in longer time frames. And I think that's part of the key that to understand each other here. Where on that timeline are we operating in? The higher up in management you come, the further into the future you are you're focusing on. So that's, I think sometimes that's one of the reasons that we don't really, we're talking past each other, because on a C-level, you might be talking about 1, 2, 3 years in the future. Mm-hmm. And in the team, you're probably looking at this sprint and the next sprint.
Yeah.
That's your key focus. And when we meet and come from those different sort of positions in the timeline, teams get stressed out because they're talking about sort of not what we're doing now or doing next, but what we're doing after X iterations of the product. Right. And they know that that's a mountain to climb, and talking about that position might be stressful. Same from a sort of C-level perspective is that, well, we need to talk about the future, and sometimes I feel like new initiatives are launched without sort of making sure that we really have developed on the previous initiatives or given them enough time to be delivered upon. So that's, I think there is an impatience in management level of taking the next steps. But to, in order to take those next steps, you need to lay the foundation. And that's probably where the teams are at currently. So I think just checking in on where on the timeline you are and creating an understanding that they're coming from different places in the timeline to the table when having a discussion probably brings a bit of transparency and then gives people an understanding to why the others are reacting the way they are in that conversation.
That's that's a very interesting approach, Amazon. I haven't really thought about it that way, but when you explain it the way you do, I mean, it's crystal clear that they are operating on very different timelines. As you said, sprints are usually that's detail oriented, right? The managements are usually strategic thinkers thinking like far ahead as well. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, but that's also when you get that you have that conversation and you know that you're going to get questions on detail level when you're not like management need to know that there's going to be practical detail oriented questions coming from the team because that's what their everyday work looks like to 90%.
Right.
And the management is usually not ready for that. And feel a bit sort of questioned when getting those kind of oriented questions.
That's very true. Have you found any interesting ways of sort of, I would say, translation methodology? The timeline scale is great for when you say you talk in broader strokes or translating sort of detail to upper level. But have you found any sort of way or analogy to explain the techier side? Maybe that's just me because I unlike you guys, come from sort of the journalistic background. I come from a tech background, which means if I'll just give an example of what I usually do, I usually use the analogy of building a house, right? Whenever a stakeholder wants something or needs something, it's usually, well, the more information you can give us or you can give the development team for what it is you want to create, that'll be good, right? If you tell me that I want a house, then all right, I'll construct you a house from what my mind tells me is a house, which usually is a floor, a door, or maybe four windows, a roof. And if you then come back to me and say, well, why does this only have one floor? The house in my mind is three floors. It has a jacuzzi, it has a pool, it has a lot of these things. Well, that wasn't specified, right? So that, I think that's a sort of a good, it really doesn't depend on what business side you come from or where the stakeholder comes from, right? It's an analogy that most people can understand and that you can sort of build upon to gain an understanding that this is what they mean. I connected to the whole estimation thing, right? It's like, well, how long is the string? Well, it's really hard if you don't have all the information to know how you should estimate it. How long does a house take to build? Well, it depends, right?
I think also that you need to be careful so that the stakeholders don't like snap the developer's fingers if they give an estimate and it's wrong.
Right.
And then you help people. You have to have an open sort of like working environment where you can be honest. So you can say that you don't know this, or you can say this is really difficult, and involve stakeholders in that discussion. Like, you want this, but it's more difficult than this. We can do this. You want to get that, and you can discuss and involve the developers in that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I have very strong feelings about estimates, but
we all.
Yeah,
it's not the time and place to go into them. But I think the important thing about sort of when people ask for estimates, my question is usually why. If to me, an estimate is I mean, you use it for prioritization, you use it for planning, you use it for a bunch of things. But it's more or less, to me, it's more or less a checkbox saying we've had an internal discussion with all relevant competencies around the scope of this project, and we feel it's small, medium, large, Excel, whatever you use, and I mean the validity of that estimate is what builds sort of understanding and trust in the long run. Any singular estimate could be on point. More likely, it's not. But that having that the knowledge that the team has engaged with relevant stakeholders and had a good sort of X-ray of the known facts of the project they're heading into is what you're after when having that sort of do you have an estimate? And that discussion is incredibly valuable. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'm questioning the hours or sprints or sort of the value of the output of the estimate. The process is very valuable, but I don't think there's you're talking about sort of how to translate and I think first of all, sometimes I feel there's a division of sort of product and tech, and I think that's a fundamental mistake. I mean, product without tech is prototypes, and tech without the product is code. So you need to see them as one. And as a product manager, when I talk to my reports, it's like tech debt is part of the product development as well. Realizing that there is sort of payoffs you need to do in order to maintain performance, to maintain everything that sort of the user values, you need to pay off and constantly sort of refurbish that house you're building. With talking with your analogy, Andreas, right. And so I try to remind sort of install that mentality that there's no divide between tech and product. There's only different skill sets and experiences coming to the table in the team. With the mission to provide as much value and solve as many as solve users' problems in a good way, so that's how I try to approach it.
I would agree with you a lot there, Anders. I think that really bringing it together to what was my leadership passion was basically is continuous learning, and I do think that it is continuous learning for everybody involved. Right, it is learning how this fits together. What is the product? What is our also working towards a common goal? I feel is good if you do set sort of a North Star and keep working towards that, and you iterate to everyone that this is the thing we are working together, and you have that as your mantra sort of and go on about that. I think that helps a lot, not only to remind people, but to remind or align people, I would say. But also, as you said, that sort of translating for people, or what we have mentioned as translating here or using analogies or sort of, is basically just to try and get people bridging together to learn from one another, to use sort of a common translative language where, well, this means this for you guys, but it means that for these guys. As you said, with an example is sort of tech debt. That is really important. I mean, it's really important for developers, but I mean, it should be important for everybody, but it's probably important for different reasons for different people, right? So you need to like sort of have people come together in an understanding that this is important for all of us.
Yeah, realize that you're better together and help each other.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, refactoring is a scary word to many people, for good reason, because once you open up that sort of Pandora's box of spaghetti code, you never know when you're coming out on the other side. But it needs to be done, and then ignoring it is only going to make the problem bigger. So a bit of sort of taking it on the chin is an approach that I really value.
Agreed. Good answers.
Perfect. Perfect. No, thank you all so much. Honestly, it's been so great to have you guys on here and give us all your insights and experiences and thoughts on everything. So yeah, before we go, I'd love to say massive thanks to you guys. So yeah, we've had Anders Theresen, who's lead product manager at Schibsted. We've had Rebecca Hagnestad, who's lead product development engagement and team manager at Bonnier News. And we've got Andreas Bernhardsen, who's CPO and product manager at the team at EasyLogic. If you're hiring for new technical roles or looking for a new role yourself, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Georgia Benton. You can find me on LinkedIn or email me at georgia.benton@evolution-nordics.com or even visit us online, evolutionjobs.com/UK/Nordics. Thank you so much again to all of our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.